I love my wife. It's a bit of resentment. I wish it never had happened.
Yes.
Or I wish I didn't know the guy.
Welcome to Life, Love, and Family.
When you focus on revenge, it can consume you from the inside out. You've been deeply hurt and now you're angry. And all you can think about is just getting even. Maybe you tell yourself you just want justice for the wrong that was done. I'm Dr. Greg Jantz and this is Life, Love, and Family. I'm talking today about vengeful thinking and revenge and what does that really mean? Now this is more common than one would ever imagine and it's hard for us to talk about because we don't want to hold up the mirror and go, I'm a vengeful person or is there a part of me that's that way? Especially if you've been traumatized and the offense has been great. You can say, I forgave, but sometimes we get into that, I just hope something bad happens to them now. At times, that anger swells back up and we're hurt. I've even had folks tell me that they feel guilty about that. That word betrayal means that you have been injured. It is a trust that's been broken and it hurts. We've all had this happen. And sometimes we've had it happen with somebody, we go, I thought they were my friend. You go, well, I'm a Christian. I'm just going to forgive them and walk away. You just put on a little Band-Aid and pretended that it healed up, but there's still that wound. I want to talk about that today, the wound, the pattern we can get into. If I'm really honest and I pause for a moment and go, okay, there are a few people out there I've been injured by and I try not to think about them. Try not to ever see them again. You run into them at a grocery store, you see them, and it's still really awkward, and you still feel something swell up inside. Vengefulness. Bitterness. What to do about this? Sam Kelly's in the studio today.
There is almost a physical feeling that comes when you think about people who've done bad things to you.
Absolutely. You've been really hurt, and we try not to think about it. We may see somebody that reminds us of that person and all of a sudden it hits us again.
Yeah.
And we're hurt and we don't know what to do with it. And you feel it physically. There are people who have been hurt so deeply and it's not resolved that you pick up offenses easy. You know, somebody may look at you wrong and you take an offense or you walk into a room and you think somebody is talking about you or saying something about you or they must. And we begin to pick up a lot of offenses. The collecting of offenses poisons us, makes us ill. We're looking out of the lenses of bitterness. And one of the things we'll begin to do is misread people's motivations. We'll misread what's really there. And we start to create our own reality. True unforgiveness can really make us physically and emotionally sick.
We have John with us right now. Hi, John.
I've been married to my wife for 7 years. We were together for 7 years before we got married.
All right.
Each of us had previous people in our lives. I knew one of her previous boyfriends.
Yes.
And I just never really liked the guy.
Sure.
And I didn't know about it until we had been together for a long time, already had kids. I thought I would be forgiving. However, whenever I think about the person seeing in a grocery store, it's just awkward and I don't know.
What's the emotion that comes up?
I hate to admit it. I guess it's hatefulness. I just hate that guy.
Do you understand the reason why you hate him?
Well, they were intimate. They were boyfriend and girlfriend.
Okay, so there was a physical
relationship. That's what bothers me. And I also think I might have something against my wife for ever being with him in the first place.
Yeah. So you're saying there was a physical, sexual relationship.
Yes.
And now when you see him, you feel, the word you used was hatred. You mentioned your wife. What is it you feel towards her?
I love my wife. And so there's a bit of resentment I wish never had happened.
Yes.
Or I wish I didn't know the guy.
Okay, what does she say about it now?
She just thinks I'm ridiculous, and she'll point out that I had a past also.
We all have made mistakes, and for somebody to say, you know, if it's a spouse, I'm really sorry about some things that happened in the past. That's not who I am now. Please forgive me. I understand this could be really difficult for you. Have you guys come to that place?
No.
Okay, because that's an important place to be. Would that make a difference for you if it's just, yes, I am so sorry. I wouldn't have done it today. I regret it. Please forgive me. I've asked God to forgive me. Would that make a difference for you?
Yeah, I think it probably would make a very big difference.
Could you begin that process with her by letting her know that you realize that this guy and this is still an issue for you and that you're working on forgiving? Can you share some of this with her?
I'd like to.
It seems like it'd be important because it sure is toxic and poisoning you, isn't it?
I was at work and I had this hatred in my heart and I was praying to God, how do I get rid of it? And he said, share the gospel with him.
Yeah, there you go.
And I saw him at the gas station. I was on my way to work. It was against every fiber in my being to turn the car around and go talk to him.
Mm.
I opened the door and he looked at me. He said, Jesus Christ, you? And I said, yeah. Do you even know Jesus Christ? And I proceeded. It was helpful, but I still have those feelings.
Sure. Let's talk about what would be normal. He'll probably never be your favorite person. Okay. Yeah. To see him, you're going to have to remind yourself, I have forgiven. God has forgiven. I have forgiven. Because if I focus on the past and what was done, it makes me miserable.
That's right.
But if I say, thank you, Lord God, with your help, I have forgiven. Now, the next step, you've got to find a way to talk to your wife about this because this probably affects your relationship with her in ways you may not realize.
Yeah.
It could affect trust. I mean, put images in your mind that are not good. Will you talk to her about this?
I don't want it to get heated and become an argument.
Well, you could just say, sweetheart, one of the things I realize about myself is I haven't forgiven some things in the past and I've really been working on it. And you can mention this guy's name. I really working on just making sure that I really have forgiven. Then you can bring in at times how this is a struggle in your relationship with her.
Yeah.
Go for it.
I really would like to do that.
Okay. I want to encourage you today, John. You've been married for 7 years. Let's not be dragging some old baggage from the past. And plus, one of the things you're doing then, you're modeling forgiveness for her.
Mm.
You're modeling it. It'll help you also love her even better.
I believe that.
Here's the thing. We always want to do it within the next 48 hours or it'll lose importance. Our courage level will drop.
Thank you very much. All right.
All right. John can be empowered to take care of this as you can because this is an example of when there's something in our past that seems so hard to get over. And then if we see this person, that re-triggers those old wounds. And if we haven't forgiven a spouse, makes it really hard to have the level of intimacy that we can have.
Today on Life, Love, and Family, we're talking about vengeful thinking. When you've been hurt so bad that it's really hard for you to be free in your own life, that you're stuck to this offense. Here's a phone number. If you are feeling that, you need some help to break free. It's to the Center, a Place of Hope. People there to help you. 888-771-5166. It's 888-771-5166.
How do we overcome this? We have Tara on the line.
Hello.
Tell us your story.
Yeah. So about 6 years ago, I met a gentleman and he had been married previously for about 22 years and he has 3 children. I have 3 children and, you know, we're both from divorce situations.
Yes.
And I met him and it was in July. We got really close really fast and just, you know, fell in love and we were, you know, going to be together forever and we're still this way to this day. But in December, he had a Christmas party with his family that he was going to go to and he wasn't ready to take me yet because I hadn't met his family yet. And that was fine with me. His ex-wife had said that she was going to go and she wanted to go with him. And I told him, I said, you know, that's really uncomfortable to me. I don't feel like that's appropriate to go together. And since she decided she wasn't going to go after all, and I felt better about that, and he was just going to take his children and go to the Christmas party. Well, then months later, I had found out that she did go after all. He didn't know that she was going to. You know, he pulled up to pick up his kids, and she jumps in the car with him. And I found out about this, and it just broke my heart, and it just made me feel so betrayed and so, like, how trust him, you know? And she obviously is number one over me. That's what that told me.
That's a strong betrayal, isn't it? A broken trust.
It really hurt more than I ever imagined. So I've never loved anybody like I've loved this man. And for her to do that and for him to be okay with it and then lie to me about it, you know, because after he got back, of course, I asked him about his children and how they had a great time. And he said, oh, yeah, Brittany drove and, you know, we had a great time and, you know, it sounded great. And I thought, okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I find out from his sister, you know, months later that, oh, no, you know, his ex-wife was there and she actually drove with him. And mind you, this was, you know, almost 6 years ago when this happened. It took me probably about 2 years to really, because it caused all kinds of fights, because it established a thing where, because she used to call him all the time, you know, about the kids, and she would, you know, call him and leave messages with old songs that they used to listen to. And I understand they had a past there, but, you know, they are divorced. Finally, after about 2 years, after several fights, and just I told him, I said, you're not, you know, respecting our relationship because you're still continuing this with her and you're investing into her life personally and it's emotional for her. And, you know, because I'm a woman and she's a woman, I understand it. And he just was kind of clueless. And so finally, I just went to God and I'm just like, God, you know, help me with this situation. I don't know how to resolve it. And so what I did was I made a commitment. Every time I saw a vehicle like hers, I would pray for her.
Wow.
And it was a huge thing for me because, number one, she has a very popular vehicle. Every time I saw one, I did it. And I'm like, God, you know, heal her from the hurt from her past with Aaron. And, you know, just help her to move on and really, you know, just stay away from us because we don't want, you know, to be involved with her and, you know, him. And it's just, it's so hurtful, you know, and I shared my heart with God and I just said, you know, this is not comfortable for me. And so about 4 years ago is when I started praying for her. And since then, his daughters got married and we've been closer now than we ever have, his ex-wife and myself, because God totally made me forgive her. And because I prayed for her so much, you know, I still do on a regular basis. They had a rough marriage and I knew she was hurt and that's why she was kind of still reaching out.
Yes. Now, taking this approach you've taken, which you use the word commitment. I committed to praying and I did, and I'm praying for her. How has this changed your relationship with your husband?
It's made a huge difference because I'm very honest about it. And I've told him, you know, this is what I'm doing. And pretty much 100% that I know of, you know, forgiven him. Of course, there's times here and there when, like, we just did a wedding for his daughter over in Utah. And, you know, there was times when he would pull him aside. You know, trying to talk to him without me. And I told him, you know, I'm very upfront with him. I just said, that's a little bit uncomfortable for me. And I had a whole group of people back home praying for me during this trip because I told him, I said, it's going to be hard. You know, here their daughter's getting married and they're going to want pictures together. And it's just it's an interesting situation. But God has totally helped me, made me have a better heart towards her. And I actually love her now to this day. And it's just, it's a beautiful
I love her
story.
To this day. Wow. Because you had a choice to make.
I did.
One of the things I see that you did was you began to see her with some compassion and to pray for her and to pray for her in a godly way, maybe how God sees her.
Yeah.
And when we see somebody who's injured like that and we put it in that proper perspective, it really changes things.
It really does. It really does. Better today, and I'm just so thankful for that experience because it just made me, you know, just number one, pray a lot. And it was cool because every time I would see a lot of her cars, I would hear something that was going on in her life that was really a struggle. And I thank God for that because he's there and he's always, you know, available for our requests. And I'm just so thankful for this experience. It's drawn me closer to God and it's drawn me closer and just helped me to love in a way that we're all supposed to love.
And do you trust your husband in the communications?
I do.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And you feel his devotion is to you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
There's comfort in that, isn't there?
Yeah, we own a business together, and we've owned it for 4.5 years out of a 6-year relationship. So we are very connected and very tight and very dependent on each other. So it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I'm so thankful.
Tara, I acknowledge the decision you made that was a healthy one. And it's an really also shows us the power of forgiveness.
Yes.
God bless you and your husband and your business.
Yes,
thank you for your call
you.
Today. Yes. What a great victory story.
The stories, we can all relate to them because everyone has had something happen. Maybe it was recent or maybe it was some time back, but you remember that feeling in your gut. Hi there.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a question. I don't have vengeful thinking as far as wanting to take revenge on someone, but I have been in a relationship since day one. Has not been a faithful relationship. My husband is not a faithful man. We have worked through counseling and books and ministry and all kinds of things, and he simply is not receiving that. So there's also a demand for me to get over it and move on. That's my question. How do you move on when it's not over?
Well, thank you for that question. When you said demand to get over it, we don't get over it until we begin to be able to make that decision, I can trust again, or I can begin to trust again. But when you say it's not over and he's not faithful, you know, I can't get over it, right?
Right.
And so
I know. And so it makes you stuck, and I don't want to be stuck. I'm not feeling called to leave my relationship. I know that my husband is sick. I have huge compassion for how sick he is, but at the same time, it hurts me to the point that I almost can't breathe.
Yes.
And, you know, that's a long time to live that way. So I would like to not be in bondage, and I'm not sure, you know, how do you move forward?
Good question. I can be compassionate towards a person's illness, and I can have more compassion towards if I know they're getting help, and there's a plan, and there's a process for getting help. Is that happening?
What's happened, which is interesting, and this is how I pray for him, the enemy has such a firm grip, and he has lived in the world and been part of the world for so long that when he reads scripture, he finds other people that sin also and excuses his behavior. I watch how the enemy steps in and switches to their lives and how much he clings. I mean, he's not Christian, so...
But he can still get help.
Does that make sense?
Yes, but one of your healthy boundaries is, I love you and I need you to get some help for this because we're not able to live this way. You're not going to make a threat. You're leaving, but we can't live healthy this way. And so you may need to pave the way. And at times I've had people in your situation where they actually start the process of getting counseling and then invite the spouse in. To not to do anything is almost continuing to allow this behavior.
I guess that's even getting closer to what my question is, and it's very hard. When I found out what was going on, I have spent our entire marriage, 9 years, getting counseling,
okay,
having a pastoral staff. He spent 2 years in sexual addiction counseling, accountability on his computer. We made an agreement in our marriage. We don't have television. Like all of those things. But basically, all those boundaries have been put in place. But if it's just 9 years later now, and if we don't go anywhere or do anything, then it's fine. But the second he leaves to go to work, it's not fine anymore. And I know that there's a release. But at the same time, I don't want my marriage, but I don't know.
And the question is?
It's an enabling to stay.
It's enabling to stay as it is. And what I mean by that is, if we allow this to continue without any clear action steps or consequences, then we enable it.
Right.
Has he had specific help for sexual addiction and gone through?
Yes, 2 years.
Two years
of it.
Okay. And where is he with that now?
Denial.
Denial after two years?
I'm still what the problem is. If he wasn't living in a Christian house, he wouldn't have to obey that way. It's fine for other people, but it may not be fine for him. In none of the understanding of victimizing another human being.
Okay.
No acknowledgement of that.
Denying and then justifying my behavior and projecting it back on you as your problem, that really is an indication
right.
of the illness, isn't it? Yeah. And so you need to be careful that you don't become a part of that illness. You've got some decisions to make, don't you?
Well, it's just hard because I'm not a young woman anymore, and I've got myself through school.
Yes.
You know, so that I can get a job and that kind of thing. But, you know, I'm taking my children's home away from them. There's a lot more involved than just me.
Oh, I hear you. I hear you. And I don't mean we're rushing into goodbye right now, but you've got to have a plan and a plan of protection for you. Because if this just stays as it is, I'm just wondering if a year from now, if we were having this conversation, how would it be?
Right.
What's it going to do to you?
Well, it's making me very sick.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I stand firm and I do the things I need to do, but, you know, you're sick to your stomach every day. I have panic attacks. I feel like I'm going to throw up all the time.
Oh, okay.
My hair. You know, things like that. And then I smile and stay the course, but it's very difficult.
Okay, because you're living with a level of anxiety that is huge, and you're talking about panic attacks, because it really immobilizes right. you, and it paralyzes you.
Right.
Yeah, and this is your husband's behavior that is obviously making you ill, but staying and not doing anything is making you ill as well.
Right. It's complex, isn't it? You know, and if it was just about me, you know.
Sure.
It's like I got the little girl, so.
Yeah, I hear you. But being codependent or enabling his behavior, look what it's doing to you.
Right.
Are you in any kind of support or help right now?
No, I know this sounds odd to call into a radio.
Yes.
I'm very private about it.
And you need to be. This is a delicate situation, and we want to honor and respect that, and needs to be very confidential. But
yes.
There also needs to be somebody, I think a professional, who can really help you navigate this and deal with some of the symptoms that you're experiencing, and to pray for wisdom and pray for, Lord, show me what I need to be doing. And obviously we're praying that he's going to come to a point of realization, because the path he's on, where this is going for him, long as he can blame you and justify his behavior and you stay in fear and panic, it's going to keep you paralyzed.
Yep. No, and that last few statements that you just made absolutely is a perfect description of our relationship.
Okay.
So I hear you. I guess I don't know how to move forward. I mean, I feel very quiet. I don't even know what to say, especially, you know, going to a counselor with that. I mean, I know what the answer is, but the consequences are high.
Yes, they are. But part of it, I want to see you be able to be strong in and of yourself, strong, and be able not that you're living with all this anxiety and panic, and have a good confidence with yourself before you make any decision.
Well, that's the point.
I want you to be strong.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I appreciate that. It was just nice to be able to say it out loud. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And it's good talking to you today. Thank you for being brave.
What a blessing. It's almost like you could hear a depression, that if you go on
yes.
with that for a while, that it can harm you. And can it harm you physically if you continue in that state of anxiety?
Well, I think because one of the things that affects our sleep
right.
and our sleep stages, it begins to affect our appetite. And we either go to one, two extremes where we don't feel like we have an appetite, we don't eat, or we're eating all the time just to bring some sense of comfort.
Right.
So we look for extremes. If you're living in a situation that was just described, there can be a lot of extremes of fear and worry and panic. Then I try to calm myself down. Maybe I'm overusing something, spending, but I kind of can be addictive myself. To stay in these situations, they get worse. And I'm not saying you immediately say, I'm leaving you tomorrow. We give plenty of opportunity for a person to get help, but we've got to be strong in and of ourselves.
How do you start that? If you are in that position and you're trying to rebuild your confidence and who you are and just be standing strong in yourself without the tightness and without the anxiety, how do you begin that if
well,
you're
one of the
there?
Things, Sam, I have a new book coming out, and this okay. just kind of opened up this avenue to share about it. It's on relationship addiction. Now, we can become addicted to these things, even though they're sick and they're unhealthy, and we stay stuck. We can be codependent, and it's a relationship addiction, and we stay in this really unhealthy dance. I just want to mention the book is going to be out in September. It's called Don't Call It Love, because that's not love.
Wow.
So the name of the book is Don't Call It Love, all about relationship addiction. If we're in relationships where there's been ongoing betrayal and another person really is controlling us and, in essence, emotionally abusing us, that's a relationship addiction. So sometimes we get attached to all that and we get afraid because we'll say things like, well, I'm not getting any younger, nobody else will want me, and our thinking really gets distorted.
Yeah, and even the idea about kids, well, we don't want to mess up the kids and they have a good situation and things like that. How important is it for children to see a parent who's got strong boundaries and who's standing
up
for things?
They need to see it. And as a kid gets older in a certain age, they're going to see it when it's not there. They may wonder, what is wrong with mom or dad?
They know something's wrong. They don't just quite know what it
is. Exactly.
Wow. Okay. This is big stuff. And if you're listening and you're going, I think I need to dig in just a little deeper, we have a place for you. And it's a really safe place where you can go online. There are some surveys you can take anonymously and just see kind of where you're standing in your health, mental health, spiritual health, physical health. And it's aplaceofhope.com. All of the Dr. Jantz books that we mentioned are there. Don't call it love.
Don't call it love. Nobody's ever regretted fighting for freedom from bitterness and resentment and being free of vengefulness. But we always regret it if we stay there. When you focus on revenge, it can consume you from the inside out. Do you really want to keep the war going? As you've listened today, could be for the first time, you've realized that you're stuck in your pain and maybe having trouble sleeping. Are you tense and struggling with digestive issues? You don't have to feel this way anymore. That's the good news. We can stop this vicious cycle today. I'm Dr. Greg Jantz, founder of the center, A Place of Hope. We would love to help. You can reach us toll-free, 888-771-5166. Again, that's 888-771-5166. Together with Dr. Tim Clinton, I'd like to thank you for listening to Life, Love, and Family. If you want to share what you've heard today, you can do so. LifeLoveAndFamily.net. There's a reason that God tells us in His Word that the wrongs done to us are His to avenge. Trust in Him to take care of the injustice. God's plan for you is to have a life of peace and joy, no matter the circumstance.
Life, love, and family.
Dan was so depressed, all he could do was lay in bed. He tried all different kinds of therapy, programs, medications. Nothing worked. But his wife says as soon as she saw the website, aplaceofhope.com, she knew that that was going to be the key to her husband's healing. And it was. Aplaceofhope.com. They don't just treat depression. They treat the whole person. If you've tried everything and you or someone you love needs help with depression, call 888-771-5166 or find out more. Aplaceofhope.com.
Women in depression, get confidential help. 1-877-257-9612. Women addicted to alcohol or drugs, get confidential help. 1-877-257-9612. Women with anxiety or eating disorders, trauma, and PTSD, get confidential help. Timberline Knowles Residential Treatment Center. 1-877-257-9612 or timberlineknowles.com.